So we are here today with Lydia King, Dr. Lydia King, as it is, author of adult fiction, young adult fiction, nonfiction, poetry. Obviously, if anybody's been paying attention, you've got the Star Wars novel coming out. And I believe you also had a story in another Star Wars collection as well. So it's not your first foray. But in addition to that, unlike most writers who have to sit there and opine, my parents really wished I'd been a doctor. You kind of did that as well. Columbia University, New York University School of Medicine. I can speak English. Also did your residency at Historical Bellevue Hospital in New York. I don't think anybody in America has not heard of Bellevue Hospital, usually in a horror flick, but it does have a bit of a reputation. And I believe also, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a doctor in both senses of the word. You're still a practicing medicinal doctor, and you also are a professor of internal medicine. Is that right? Still doing both of those? Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you're a little bit busy. Got a little bit of stuff going on. I wasn't originally going to bring this up, but I actually saw a talk that you had with somebody else. I apologize. I can't remember who they were. But I thought it was kind of interesting, the fact, one of the reasons you said that you hadn't quit being a doctor, other than the fact, of course, loving it, now that you're a best-selling author, just a little bit, a couple of books there, is the fact that they kind of fill spaces in, like, you're a doctor, you deal with hardships and stuff like that, and then you can kind of have that little outlet in writing. But you know, sometimes the writing, you know, you get a little dark in there too, and it's like, you know, I need to go out there and help somebody and connect with people, which I thought was really, really interesting. Doesn't sound like you're going to be quitting either one any of those anytime soon.
Yeah, no time soon. And they have been really, they weirdly balance each other out fairly well. It's funny because when I I think when I got my first book deal, I had a couple doctor friends, and they said, oh, so you're going to quit practicing medicine, right? Like, you've clearly hit the jackpot of like truly happy careers, and you're going to leave medicine behind. And it was a really striking thing for people to say, because it was more than one doctor who said it. And I think it really spoke to like the burnout in the medical profession. But I was like, no, I'm not gonna quit yet. And at the time I was like, no, I'm not gonna quit. But they have managed to balance each other out like shockingly well. And they have different stressors that both feel really bad at times. Mm-hmm. But they're so different. And so when you switch back from one to the other, kind of it does refresh you quite a bit.
No, I get that. Yeah, I'm actually married to a CBR nurse, so So I've dealt with a little bit of stress sometimes, not personally, but you know, on the side there. So I totally get that. Sometimes you just need a break. That you talk about the burnout. I mean, I think that's only gotten worse in the last few years. Actually, it was kind of funny because, well, I don't say funny, but it's, you know, funny, not funny. Haha. I actually, because I could not get my hands on the new Star Wars book. There was no ARC. There was no ALC. I actually picked up autographed copy. Nobody else can have it. It's mine. Beautiful Poison. A Beautiful Poison, which I absolutely loved, by the way. I wasn't, you know, sure. I'm not always a big historical fiction fan. That's not a secret. I've mentioned that before. But this one, you wrote it so well. I was just like drawn into the story. You did a great job, I thought, of bringing it. I mean, it's 1918. You definitely set it there in 1918. And it's the little stuff like, you know, you had to crank the car to start it and stuff, you know, things that people not necessarily say about or think about all the time. But I love this story. And I also noticed when you were talking, and I apologize, it was a couple of ladies. I can't remember their names. But I did not realize that A Beautiful Poison and a lot of your other ones, I believe, Opium and Absinthe.
Uh-huh.
And a couple other ones, they're all actually, there's a little bit of strain. They're all tied together.
Yeah. They're technically all standalone novels, but
right.
I like to take full advantage of the fact that as an author, I can put Easter eggs in all of my books, and I do. Mm-hmm. And so for the historical novels that I write, they all have some commonality. So they all take place in New York City.
Right.
And they all feature some relationship with a single family over time. And so they don't usually directly, there is a little bit of overlap of actual living characters between A Beautiful Poison and the half-life of Ruby Fielding. You don't need to know that. It's sort of like if you read a couple and you're sort of like, I've seen that family name. Wait a second, this is the great, great, great grandmother of the person who's in like A Beautiful Poison. So it's fun to be able to do that. And that was just sort of one of the ways that I just wanted to sort of tie things together. But yeah, that was fun. It was fun to do.
Yeah, when I was first starting out, not realizing that these were all connected together, the first thing I was thinking is like, World War I, World War II, she's got a thing for the World Wars. Get the little background, but then I realized it ends up being more the time frame than it is the fact that you're actually like, I've got to get some world war in the background.
It's usually not that. I mean, there's usually a couple of things, usually a cluster of like three or four items that I'm like, oh, I really want to put this in the book. And I usually don't know exactly how they're going to work together. But like for A Beautiful Poison, it was 1918, which is like the end of World War One. So I wanted World War One there. And that's thanks to my English teachers in high school who had me read World War One novels and poetry. And it just really just stuck itself in my head. So I wanted that there. I had done some research on the influenza pandemic, which happened in 1918. So that was that second thing. The third thing was the history of the ladies who worked in the radium, who suffered from radium poisoning after working in the watch factories, right? So I had also done some research on that, and I was like, oh, it would be great if there's a character who's suffering from radium poisoning, slight spoiler in the book or whatever, but you know, works in a watch factory, and the timing was right. So I was like, okay, I'd like that too. And then I thought, well, I want to have some sort of book about like a couple of friends, and they're just deeply tied to each other. So I had these ideas, and I had the three friends, and I knew like one was going to be super wealthy heiress. One was going to be kind of like trying to work his way up somewhere in Bellevue, which where I worked. So I wanted Bellevue in there. So I just had all these different things. I didn't really have a plot. And I was trying to figure out like, how do I make a story out of this? I've never written historical fiction before. I don't know what I'm doing. And so I just decided to kill somebody on the first page, which is one way to do it. It works.
It is.
But as soon as I realize I'm going to kill somebody on the first page, it's not going to be one of the main characters, obviously. But then I was like, oh, this is what's going to bring the characters together. This is what's going to make the story, because they're going to try to solve the mystery. And then I thought, why would the death of somebody bring some people together? That means that they're estranged. And so then there's a story about they haven't been together for a while. What brings them together? And then the whole story just fell into place after that.
Yeah, that's the tough part. Is like, I think like sometimes I talk to authors and it's like, you know, the beginning idea is easy and the end, I know where I want to get to, but figuring out how do I connect everything? How do I get this from here to there? Especially when you're writing a murder mystery, because you've really got to have that ability to put those clues kind of in there, so people at the end of the book can kind of go like, oh, you know, but they can't be obvious on the way. I did think I got a little bit of a kick out of it in the author's notes. You mentioned something about the fact that you didn't want to make the radium poisoning obvious. I believe you always wanted that ability as she poisoned stuff like that. And since you brought it up, I don't feel like I'm spoiling it there. But for those of us of a certain age, I don't know if they still teach this in school or not. As soon as I saw where she worked, I'm like, oh, I know what's going on here. I know exactly why she's hurt. I think I learned that in high school back in the 80s. Again, I don't know if they go into the radium girls and all that stuff quite as much anymore.
Yeah. Maybe not so much there's a chunk of time where I think I didn't hear much about it, but there was a recent nonfiction book that came out called Radium Girls, like a couple of years ago. And it was really, it sold really, really well. And so it sort of re-enlivened it. And then weirdly enough, like a couple of years ago, the kids at my kids' school, they actually did a play about the Radium Girls, like the Radium, the women who like fought and tried to, and like basically battled against the company because they were dying of radium poisoning. And I was like, I can't believe it was a school play. It was a school play. So it's like, it's definitely out there. Good. And it was fun to write. And I think it's fun for readers who totally understand what's happening in that situation, why this person is getting sick and stuff like that. There's something really creepy about when you know the fate of somebody, but the character doesn't know. Like, there's something really about that. And as you're reading it, you're sort of like, oh my God, like, you don't even know. Like, you have no
idea. I love that you ended the book before that became knowledge, common knowledge, what was happening.
Right. So I couldn't make it like, the stuff that happened with all the litigation and the Radium Girls didn't happen until well after 1918.
Right.
So I couldn't like reveal it then. And so, you know, this character suffers and never truly understands why. And so that's one of the reasons why I like to put an author note at the back of my historical novels, because there's so much in there that I'm thinking about that I want the readers to be aware of when they finish the book, so they can read more and learn more if they want to. But it's fun because I think historical fiction is a great way to learn history, and it's not nearly as stuffy as when I personally was in like high school and college. I didn't really enjoy history then at all. And now I love it.
But some of it sticks though. Some of it does stick. I do appreciate two things. One, that the book all takes place in 1918. Just the fact that it's, for some people, it's a short novel. I mean, this story is told relatively quickly for everything that happens. And two, the fact that, like you said, in the author's notes, you did have a lot of comments on those other books that you'd read. You'd had the comments about, and I apologize, I forgot the two doctors' name, but those were actual real historical people. Gettler, and I can't remember the other one.
Dr. Gettler, and I'm like blanking on the other name.
That's
too.
Okay.
These were the two doctors that helped establish the office of the chief medical examiner in New York, which is weird because when I worked at Bellevue, like that office was across the street from my dorm. And was unfortunately very much busy during 9/11. They had to build like a gigantic building just to house all the people who were working at the time. It was just a really, really sad time. But yeah, so it's weird because I have these like connections to so many little things in the books that are really personal, but it's also why I found it so, I felt kind of compelled to write this book because there were so many things about New York City history that I think a lot of people are unaware of. And I just wanted to put it in there.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how busy 1918 was. There was a lot of stuff going on all at once. I also thought it was kind of funny. I double-checked the copyright. The paperback came out in 2017, so that's almost 100 years after the original. One of the things I thought was timely, too, obviously the fact that this did come out in 2017. You also mentioned, I heard, in Patient Zero, how you ended up, because of its where it came in, I think you had to add a chapter for COVID at the end of that one. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's going to be people reading this that are like, it's like very, very timely. All of the same stuff. People, you know, people don't want to wear the masks. Everybody's got to get of course, they were all gauze masks back in 1918. But there's just so much of it. It's like, that was last year. I don't know what she means historical fiction. This is now.
I know. It's funny how like these things came out, and then I have other friends who wrote about like the influenza epidemic in 1918, and they're sort of like, God, history is really repeating itself on so many levels. And I think a lot of people think that when we wrote Patient Zero, Nate Peterson co-writes my nonfiction books with. So I think people thought like, oh, when that book came out, we were just sort of like striking while the iron's hot and like, oh, it's so trendy to write about pandemics. But we had been working on the book deal before the pandemic started. And so we were hammering out the paperwork for like the contract. And I read something in, I think it was probably CNN, about this infection, this respiratory infection in Wuhan, China. Mm-hmm. And I sent either an email or a text, and I was like, hey, if this turns into something, we should use it as a side note in our novel, in our book about like, you know, how investigations happen, you know, at the beginning of like an outbreak. And I'll like, it'll be great because it'll be recent, you know? And he's like, yeah, sure. And like, we had no idea. We had no idea that it was going to turn into this huge thing. And then as it was happening, because we were writing about the origins of diseases, I was like, I'm going to have to write a chapter on the origin of COVID. And there's so much missing. Like, how am I going to do this? And then my husband got COVID. And then like my patients were all getting COVID. And I was like writing a chapter on COVID. And I'm like, this is the weirdest experience of like, this is the strangest thing ever. Like, it was not good. But in the end, like, I actually learned a ton about when I wrote that chapter and wrote that book. So it was still great, but it was a very surreal writing experience, writing about pandemics during a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. The weird time, because like I said, I did notice that you actually had, as you said, started that book before COVID was even an inkling. And all of a sudden it's like, and it's no longer historical anymore. Speaking of historical, you do write a lot of, at least your mysteries are historical. Is there something about historical, like I said, I know you said you love history now, or is it the fact that you just love that age? Or I think a lot of times too, mystery writers, when you're writing an historical thing and you don't have to worry about DNA and security cameras and all that other stuff as well.
And your cell phone tracking you wherever you go. Yeah. That that sure makes, I think, modern mysteries, it just makes them difficult in a different way, which is why I think it's funny that, you know, in certain like mysteries now, like, you know, Glass Onion, they're like, you know, the phones are not working for part of the time, or yeah. So my friend, I just met him recently. I think I can call him a friend now. Sean Doolittle wrote a book called Device Free Weekend, which is like about, it's a thriller, but like everybody has to leave their devices behind. So it goes back to like, take out the tech part so that you can have like a good old fashioned, you know, thriller sort of thing. So yeah, I do enjoy leaving all that modern stuff behind when writing them, but that's not really what attracts me to writing the historical stuff. It's usually, like I said, there's like three or four things that just sort of come up and I just get so entranced with turning that into a story. So like, for example, for The Impossible Girl, that takes place in like 1850. And I had learned a lot about the history of grave robbing, oftentimes for the sake of teaching medical students gross anatomy. And I'd heard that sometimes women were used as scouts at the graveyards. Like they would just sneak up and like join a party that was like a funeral procession to find out whether or not the dead bodies were going to have like a guard, or they were going to be locked, or what was going on, so that they could scout that out and tell grave robbers, so the grave robbers could go and steal the body. And I thought, who is this woman who is scouting dead bodies for the grave robbers? And so that's how The Impossible Girl came to be. It's big. I just get this idea that is usually born of a really interesting, bizarre nugget of history. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to have to look that up. So every single one of my books has this weird nugget of strangeness in it that comes from history, that I'm like, all right, I'm going to dig deeper into this little bit and find out what's going on. So that happened with Opium and Absinthe, that happened with The Half-Life of Ruby Fielding. I like the strange twists of history that you're sort of like, what was happening here? And like, why, how could, what was going on? And, you know, what would it be like to live then? And how can we make things exciting? So that's kind of how those books all end up happening.
Gotcha. And don't take me wrong either. I just, because you can ignore all of that stuff, like, you know, you don't have to worry about the satellite photos or anything. As a writer, I know you guys have, you do anything historical, you have to get it right. There's going to be somebody pointing out that your book set in 1924 included a motorcycle that wasn't created until 1925. Nitpickers come out of the woodwork when you do a historical book.
Yeah. And I try my best, and I really try to be good. And I have fact checkers also who, you know, look at my stuff and double check that, like, you know, if I mention a certain dress or shoe or car, like they fact check that like it actually existed at that time, or they'll actually come to me and be like, I'm pretty sure this is wrong, like this didn't exist then. And then I have to pull up the reference and be like, here's the magazine that has an ad for this thing in that year. This back then. So that happened a lot, but like I know I've made mistakes. I think there's a mistake in the beginning of The Half-Life of Ruby Fielding about like the US activity in Europe at the time, and I'm pretty sure that was wrong. And so like, and it feels really bad when that happens, and I'm like, oh god, like why would I be better about this? But there's so many details, and like you're bound to get something wrong no matter how hard you try. But the things that I did get right, I'm pretty proud of, because I was really, like, I don't think anybody is going to care about the distances or the name of this house or on the corner of like 12th Street and First Avenue. Like, probably nobody cares but me, but like, I had the maps printed out and I was like, with magnifying glasses, I was like, making sure that the cost of everything was correct and the types of clothing that they were wearing was correct. And like the, so I had to do, I have to be able to like see the world and know how transportation works and what everything costs and what money looks like and what a purse was called, wasn't called a purse, and all that kind of stuff. So it, there's a lot of work that goes into it. And no, it's fully perfect, but you can't also, you can't spend forever writing a book. At some point in time, you've got to stop doing the research and just get on with it,
Unless you're going to like the research is in Maui or something, you might have to spend a little extra time there. But so, I mean, you go from the period pieces. Obviously, you've got the Star Wars book coming out, which, yes, I know, supposedly happened a long, long, long time ago. But let's face it, it's anybody who reads Star Wars, you don't picture it a long time ago. You picture it far future, spaceships and laser guns. Do you find that it's more fun doing those multiple, and not even the time periods, but also the genres? You've done young adult, you've done nonfiction. Does it really help your process to be able to jump back and forth as like, okay, I've done this, now I need to take my brain elsewhere, take my creative juices a different direction?
It helps because I get bored pretty easily. So like it would be not impossible for me to do it, but it would be challenging for me to do a series. Like if somebody said, all right, I want you to do a young, like an adult series where it's just the same character doing something slightly different, but in every single book, right? And I'd get really bored after a while. And so I have a tendency to, I genre hop, as you can see, a lot. And it's because you just never, I find a lot of different things interesting. I find a lot of things fascinating. Like I'm looking things up on Wikipedia constantly. Thank goodness for Wikipedia, because I'm a pretty curious person and I never know if it's going to be grave robbers or it's going to be like, something like sentient spaceships, which is what I wrote about in Toxic. I just decided to write about a spaceship that was alive and was slowly dying, and I thought that was really neat. It's so yeah, in the beginning of my career, I think my agent was like a little like, oh, okay, Lydia, now you keep coming up with these really weird ideas and like, you should probably stick to your brand. A brand is so important oftentimes when writers are starting out. Like you do one thing, and if readers like it, they want to see something kind of close to the same thing. And if you start doing something different, you can lose them. And so I have played that game. And as a result of that, I have a really disparate, I have like a very varied readership, and they don't cross read, So I have people who like nonfiction and they're sort of like, I'm not going to read your YA. And I have some people who love the YA and they're like, I'm not going to read historical. And it's something that I have chosen to deal with. I have a readership in a lot of different places, and they may not cross over, but like, I can't help it. I just
Not a bad thing necessarily, though, either.
so.
Although I do have to say, after watching that other interview with you, I believe it's November Girl, is that the name of it?
Yeah.
I heard you talk about that, and I'm going to have to read that at some point. I'm just going to have to.
My favorite book, that's one of the most favorite books that I have ever written, because that came from the fact that I am a Gen X kid, and when I was younger I used to hear the song The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald all the time, and I love that song. It haunted me to no end, and it made me really obsessed with Lake Superior and the sinking of ships on Lake Superior. And if you read like the lyrics of that song, they talk about the Witch of November, which is the personification of the storms that, sink ships on Lake Superior. And I'm like, I'm gonna make that a person. And that's how that book happened. So yeah, that was a book that actually I had a lot of difficulty trying to sell that book, because that was the first young adult book I tried to sell after Control and Catalyst happened. And people were like, you do science fiction and now you're doing this like weird, it's not even urban fantasy, it's like rural fantasy. They're like, what, why are you doing that? It's contemporary fantasy, this is science fiction. And I did it because that's just what I wanted to write. But I had to get a lot of rejections, like so many, because I was not playing by the rules.
Well, and like sci-fi and fantasy aren't always grouped together anyhow, so I don't know what they were complaining about there.
Seriously.
But I was born in Michigan, so of course, you know, that one, that whole storyline kind of caught my eye, even though, you know, I'm living out here in Nebraska now too. Oh, that's the only thing I was going to mention. I know it's not your fault. You had nothing to do with it, but I keep getting Catalyst and Cataclysms mixed up in my head.
Oh, yeah, that's okay.
It's like I started to write that down the other day. I'm like, wait, no, Catalyst was the other book. Cataclysm's the new book.
It's a Star Wars book called Catalyst, which is very confusing. Right. So, but yeah, I remember being like, oh, is that going to be a problem? Because these two books kind of sound the same, but no, it's not a problem.
Well, it's not a problem for most people. I just keep getting them mixed up in my head. It's like Control, Catalyst, Cataclysm, Quackery. We got all the sounds covered. I was going to ask you, and I do ask this about people who write in a, almost a genre, that's not the right word I'm looking for, write a book in an established universe or an established character. For instance, Brian Freeman took over the Jason Bourne series. You're writing in the Star Wars series, and not only are you taking over necessarily a character, but Star Wars, I think, is even more different. You know, somebody who takes over Jack Reacher or Jason Bourne or one of those characters, they've got the main characters, but it's here in the world.
Yeah.
You have got, in this type of series, you're handling characters that have been handled not by just necessarily an author. For instance, I know this is supposed to be the sequel to Convergence, Cataclysm sequel to Convergence. Right. But a lot of those characters were also handled in Battle of Jedha. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they're going to, you know, the whole High Republic thing is its whole interconnected universe. Do you find that for you personally, I know each writer is different. Do you find it easier to jump into these stories because you've got these characters that are already well thought out and have background stories and you don't have to do all that quote unquote busy work? Or do you find it more difficult because now you've got to stay true to a character within reason that maybe you would have taken a different direction?
So it's much harder. So it's much, much harder to write in a world where the characters have existed before you got there, because you have to make sure that you are giving them the same voice. They're thinking the same way. So there's like, anytime that you're world building, there has to be consistency. In this case, the world is already built, but I'm still building within it. Right. Mm-hmm. So I have to make sure the consistency issue is probably one of the most, not the most difficult, but it's one of the many difficult things that I had to do when writing Cataclysm. So I was continuing on a story with several different characters. I was adding new ones in, but each and every one of those characters lives within a set universe with set rules. And I had to make sure that they played by the rules. And if they broke the rules, like, it just wouldn't make sense, and fans would know, and they'd be like, well, why are they doing that? That doesn't make any sense. And so you have to maintain the sense of the architecture of this world, right? You can't be like house down. So there were a lot of things that I had to abide by in writing it, and it made it difficult. It was hard for sure.
I can imagine too, getting to the point, and I haven't read the book, so if this happens, it's not a spoiler. I had no idea. But if you get to a spot where you're like, you're writing this character and it's like, I really, really want to kill Axel. But, you know, the powers that be are like, no, he's got to be around for the next story. And you're like, dang, but I can't kill him. As opposed to, you know, George R. R. Martin, who just kills everybody every chapter.
Yeah, but he's the only person writing the stories. And so,
right.
You know, in with the High Republic, like every single phase of the High Republic, it's like a multimedia thing, right? So it's not just adult novels, it's also young adult, and it's also middle grade, and there are comics, and there's audiobooks, and there's so many things, and they overlap and they intertwine. So we have to have constant discussions and making sure that everything matches up okay, or else there's going to be inconsistency. So yeah, like it's not a George R. R. Martin thing where he's like
one
of his world. There are many players in this big sandbox, you know. So that does make it tougher in a lot of ways. That being said, there's still an enormous amount of freedom and creativity that I was able to really just have fun with. So it's not like I was like, oh, I can only do this, I can only do that. And I'm not, and I don't want to talk too much about the sort of behind the scenes stuff, but suffice it to say, this book feels very much like just, I put so much into making sure these storylines worked and that these characters, kind of mean to say that they struggled and that they had to get to, a place by the end of the book that feels satisfying. And that was hard. That was really hard too, but nobody handed that to me, you know? So the book was, the book feels very, very close to me. Like I put a lot of work into it, and I'm proud of what we have at the end of it. But yeah, it was like, I've said this before and I absolutely mean it. It's one of the hardest things that I've ever written, for sure.
I can imagine. One of the things that made me think about how I'm going to treat those characters the same, and I apologize, I didn't write her name down. One of the knight, or the Jedi Knight, begins with a G. Isn't there the Jedi Knight? I listened to the audiobooks on a couple of them, and obviously I can't blame the readers, because they don't know, they probably didn't listen to each other, obviously. But just the way they read that character in the two books I had, it's like, okay, that second book, she shouldn't be that upbeat and happy. You're reading her wrong. And I think that's even harder as a writer. I mean, I always tell people, emotions don't always come through in text, or prose or something like that. You've got to write that emotion in there, but it's not necessarily, two people can read the same character and read them completely different, because of course we also put a little bit of ourselves when we're reading into it.
Absolutely. So yeah, I know it's such a treat to be able to hear these wonderful voice actors do their work, but sometimes it's a surprise because you're sort of like, I heard it different in my head. Mm-hmm. And then their version and really enjoy it and sort of like immerse yourself in it. It's pretty neat though.
Yeah. And plus, like it says, whichever one you listen to first, that's the voice you're expecting from now on. And then somebody else reads that different book and you're like, wait a second, no, wrong voice. Stop it.
But yeah, it's funny because even with like hearing, like Battle of Jeddah, the audiobook, which I listen to, there are certain characters in that book and, I have a very clear of memory of like what they sound like according to the audiobook, but like, when I wrote them in Cataclysm, oh, I said it wrong.
I'm telling you, there's too many C's going on here.
I'm like a gazillion times, so I think I'm allowed to mess that up once. But when I was writing it, or even now, like when I think about some of the passages or whatever, they sound different in my head. So oh, yeah. It's so weird. It happens. I love it.
Yeah, I feel like for every author who goes out there and like, they're like, oh, so-and-so did a great job, there's got to be at least one character that were like, they didn't do that right. That's not the way I wrote them. Although hopefully some of them, I do love it when a series, of course, obviously usually by the same author, does get the same voice actors, you call them. I always call them readers, but that's probably not the right, voice actor is probably the right word for it. They get the same one from book to book. And so they kind of carry on that whole tone of voice and everything. So I don't see a lot of people hopping in asking any questions, so I'm going to do a couple more. I'm not going to keep you all night. Also, I do know that, for instance, I think I saw today you're going to be at the Bookworm.
Yes.
18th?
I think it's April
16th. 16th, that sounds better. All right. So everybody, if you're coming out, if you see this, obviously stop by there. She's going to be out there. You'll be able to get to see her live. That's a big plus. A couple of questions I always try to ask authors again, because again, I know a lot of people wanted to hear probably more about Star Wars, but it's not out yet. We're trying to avoid spoilers. Although, A, thank you for putting that out. It's coming out on my birthday, so that's a plus. I'm sure, I know you didn't intend that. A shout out to a bookstore, any bookstore.
Oh, I definitely. It would go to the Bookworm Omaha for sure, our local indie. But also the Dundee bookstore. I love the Dundee bookstore. Oh, nice. Run by Theodore Wheeler. And it's just a great, they're both really, really wonderful stores. I've worked with both of them and they are just, there's nothing like a good bookstore just makes you so happy.
And when I link this on, when I put this on YouTube, I'll have links to both of those, as well as to all of your social media and stuff as well, and your website. The other question I try to ask, I don't always ask it. I feel like I should. Obviously, you're a doctor. Obviously, you're an author. I'm sure you get a ton of, hey, can you look at my manuscript? Or, hey, can you look at this spot on my shoulder? What is there, what talent, what skill, what achievement do you have that maybe gets overshadowed that you wish, you know, people knew about? Like, you know, black belt in ninjutsu or something you've got hiding in your closet.
I have like a lot of like small skills, like nothing that's like major that I'm like very happy about, but I'm like I like knitting and crocheting, and I have a crocheted Grogu in his pram somewhere.
There we go.
And then I also love baking, like extravagant, like gloriously pretty cakes.
Got the foodie thing going on, huh?
So it's not exactly good for me. I did a lot of pandemic baking. So if you look through my Instagram, you'll see this like periods of time where there are these like 6-layer rainbow cakes and stuff like that, because it was a pandemic and I was writing about a pandemic and I had to like bake sweets. So that was just my
Well, app. I mean, yeah, when you're trying to keep everybody else safe, so you're trying not to go out of the house if you can avoid it, you kind of got to find something to do around the house.
Yeah. And for me, it was like, you know, baking things that I probably shouldn't have baked, but gosh, it was so worth it. It was so much fun.
Oh yeah. Never trust a skinny chef, I think. This is not from baking. This is just because, you know, I like food. All right. I obviously would have loved if we'd done this a little later, just so that I could talk a little bit about Star Wars. However, it's probably better that I didn't do it after the fact, because I hate spoilers. Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like there's like on movies, there's a year. Don't tell me any spoiler for a movie for at least a year. Books are kind of the same way. I think that's part of the reason I wrote Beautiful Poison. I'm like, it came out in 2017. If you hear a spoiler, it's really not my fault. Remember that this is, even though it's not chronologically first, this is the first book that came out with those shared family.
That's my first historical novel.
All right. So if you're not a Star Wars fan, you're not a Star Wars geek, if you like mysteries, I'm going to tell you to read this. Absolutely love this book, even though that's not my historical is not my normal genre. That's
a compliment, I gotta say.
I sat down because I started a new role at a new job. It's an old job, but it's a new role, so I've been very busy. And I actually was beginning to wonder if I was going to get through this. And finally, yesterday, I just sat down, and I was on page 100 and something. And this is only slightly over 300 pages. It's not huge, but I finished it in less than 2 hours. I wasn't speed reading. I was just out there enjoying it. And next thing I know, I was like, okay, I finished it. And to me, that's a great, not every book that you have to read needs you to be able to have a thesaurus handy to figure out what's going on. Obviously, there's a few words and stuff there that were very 1918 that maybe I didn't recognize right off. Like there was one for the purse, and it wasn't clutch. It was something else.
Reticule.
Right. But in context, I knew exactly what you were saying. So it's like not like I had to stop and look something up. But the fact that the story just dragged me right through, and next thing I know, once I actually had some time to sit down and read it, next thing I knew it was over, and it's like, there's more books in the series. I know there's more books in the series. But yeah, if you haven't read A Beautiful Poison, check it out. Last I knew, Bookworm in Omaha still has, I didn't take the last autographed copy. I think there's still some there. Also, I do know, I think I saw it on Twitter. It was either Twitter or Instagram today. I think you signed a bunch of books for the Bookworm.
I went to the Bookworm and I signed all the pre-orders that need to be mailed out across the country.
Gotcha.
So that way you guys will get your books next week.
Got a little hand cramp going on then. Got it.
Happy they are going to be on their way out soon.
Nice. But like I said, if you want a signed copy too, reach out to the Bookworm. I always give them a shout out. I figured you'd give them a shout out, but I did like that you mentioned the Dundee one too, because I honestly don't think I've been there. I'm going to have to stop there.
Like traveling, like a traveling bookstore for a while, but they do have a brick and mortar store now in Dundee.
Gotcha.
The bakery and where Dario's used to be, because Dario's closed. But that's where they are. And they're not like, they have like, You should call and find out when their hours are, because I don't know exactly what their hours are, but yeah, they're just great bookstore. Love
I
them.
can't go anywhere without stopping at a brick and mortar bookstore. Every vacation, we got to find a bookstore. But anyhow, I want to thank you for stopping out here. Like I said, this will get put out on YouTube. I will give links to everything. I'll edit it up a little bit, mainly to get rid of all the ums I've said in the past 5 minutes. Make it a little shorter. But anyway, like I said, you guys, Lydia Kang. Oh, that's the other thing I was going to tell you. Shout out from the Bookworm. When I told them that I was going to have you on here, because I used to work there, so they do pay attention once in a while. They all told me that you are the nicest person to work with. They
Aww.
all absolutely love you over there. So you've got some fans, not just because you're an author, but they actually, like I said, they had the nicest compliments about you just as a person in general.
Oh, that is so sweet. Well, they are wonderful too. So back at you, Bookworm. Love you
All right.
guys.
So thank you, Lydia. I'm going to let you have the rest of your evening to yourself. Always appreciate it. And I can't wait to read the new Star Wars one.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to catch up on The Mandalorian tonight. I can't wait. So
Oh yeah, don't even talk to me about how far behind I am on The Mandalorian.
I won't tell you what's happening, but excited to do a little catching up tonight. So, well,
Yeah,
thank
let me just say that the UFC girl is still in the show where I'm at, so I'm a little bit far behind.
Oh, you are behind.
I'm so far behind.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. You have a ways to go, but like, don't worry. It's all good. Have you watched Andor yet? We should probably
Yes, I
talk
did
about
watch
that.
Andor.
Did you watch it?
Yep, we yep, my wife and I watched Andor. She was not as much into The Mandalorian, which is probably why I haven't
Oh, I
gotten
see.
through it.
Yeah, I'm so excited for the next season of Andor. Like, that's just like, oh, the writing has been so good.
Yeah, sometimes they just suck you in. Although I do know that she's going to cheat on me in the upcoming weekend. I'm taking my daughter out to see, we're going to go up to Michigan to see V.E. Schwab while she's in town. And my
Nice.
wife, you ever watched The Last Kingdom? Okay, so it's old, it's medieval, it's Viking type stuff with a guy who is very, very handsome. And they finished the series, but they're going to have like a wrap-up type movie. And it comes out the weekend I'm gone, and she's like, "I'm cheating on you." I'm like, she's watching it without me. I'm like, "I see how you
Sorry, sorry.
are."
Nothing
All
to
right.
worry
Thanks
about.
again, Lydia. Have a good one, and we look forward to the rest, the books that are coming forth, and we'll see what else you're going to be writing in the future.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye.